Carl Lancaster remembers tangling with a crazy man, chicken stealing that could hardly be called stealing, sleigh riding, and a couple of mean tricks that happened to him when he came over to Princeton from Harvard. He explains maintenance work on the railroad and some of the old logging terms.
He said I should ask you about sleigh riding.
Yeah, you bet.
He said you tell me about something about that.
You know, right.
So what's the story about the sleigh riding?
You mean the coasting or?
Well, I don't know. You didn't tell me.
Well, I'll tell you what we used to do. We used to take a pair of light bobs and we'd get up on top of a hill there at Harvard. We'd just take and we'd put a plank on each side, and by golly, we'd swing that darn tongue right back over that front bunk of that sled, and then one stand on the back bunk and steer that darn thing. What I mean, we'd go down the mountain. You bet none another time. He might have reference to that.
Huh.
It's when they reorganized the Grange at Kennedy Ford. When they reorganized the Grange at Kennedy Ford, we took a 6-horse team down there that night. You bet.
What did you do?
Well, we went to, well, we, well, the Grange, you know, is a kind of a former farmer's lodge, you know. And we had a good Grange at Harvard at that time, and by golly, and they wanted to reorganize, and so there was about at least 25 of us. You know, at that time, when we left Harvard, the road doesn't go like it does now. We went up over them darn hills. And when we got what we call Hampton, we went around through Onaway and that way and up over them hills. And, yeah, we took a 6-horse team down there. We bet on one sleigh. Bet. Well, that was quite a trip. You see, we all pulled into Harvard and fed. And two school teachers went with us and we left just as quick as they got out of school. And I don't know. And I think that we kind of got criticized for that, because I think we didn't get back time, I think, for the teachers to go to work quite early enough the next morning. Because I'll tell you, that was a long trip with a 6-horse team. We went from Harvard to what they call Kennedy Ford. Do you know where Kennedy Ford is? Well, that's right where we went to, from Harvard to Kennedy Ford. You bet. You betcha. Yeah, you see, Glenn and I, we were kids together, you know. He lived on one side of Harvard and I lived on the other. Yeah. You bet.
Mm-hmm. Well, did the kids, is that what you did for kicks in the winter?
Yeah,
sleigh ride?
That's all we, that's what they, yeah, and go to dances and stuff like that, you bet. Betcha. Mm-hmm. And then up the river, once in a while they'd have a dance up the river, something like that. And we didn't have load enough, we'd only take one team. We had, figured we had load, and we'd take 4 horses, you know, on one sled.
Hmm.
You bet? Mm-hmm. You betcha.
Well, what about chickens?
Oh, did Glenn tell you about that?
He told me to have you tell me about it.
Oh, I'll tell you, that was a crime. I'll tell you. They had revival meetings there at Harvard. And he should have told you, he knows just about as much as I did. We had his team and my team. And we've been sleigh riding in this old bachelor down there, you know. And I had a darn good set of bells on my team. And so, by golly, we went around with a flat. I took the bells off from the horses, you know. And I don't know, there was Glenn and I and his brother here. And we must have stole about a half a dozen chickens, you know. And so, by golly, we pulled out of there. And then when we got the chickens, got them in the darn sacks. And so then we pulled up the road. I pulled up the road I was driving. I pulled up the road and turned around. When I stopped, I put the bells back on my horses, and we pulled right up in front of this. It was Jim Cochran, the old bachelor. So I pulled right up in front of his house and hollered at him. He says, "What do you want?" I says, "Jim, I says, we got a bunch of chickens. He says, "Can we bring them in and cook them?" "Oh yeah, you bet." So by golly, so we did. We unloaded them and all of them. So then we took our horses down, put them in Jim's barn, and I'll tell you, we had quite a party. But the only mistake we made, we got the only white hen he had. Yeah, that's the only mistake we made. So he caught me in Harvard one day, and I was, he never said anything for a long time, and so he caught me in Harvard one day, you know. He says, you know, he said you stole the only white hen I had. He went out to see how you been. Yeah, Only there was quite a crew of us that night, too. There was the two Gilders and myself, Martin Johnson and Sigurd Johnson, and... Oh, I don't know, and Joe Fors. Oh, gee, there was a big crew of us. You bet.
I heard there was a pretty good rivalry between Princeton and Harvard back in those days, too.
Well, I pulled in there one night to a dance. I pulled in there one night to a dance with the Fors team. And I had, Hornby. I had Walt Hornby's team with me that night. I had his team in the lead. He had a nice pair of little gray mares. Gee, there's a good leader. And we pulled in there. I just pulled right through. And by golly, when we got ready to go home from the dance, by gosh, we didn't have a blanket or nothing. And yeah, they stole the whole works. The only thing we had left was the blankets on our horses. They took the rest of them, bet. Oh yeah, but ordinarily we didn't have too much trouble. But one night I lost the top off of my buggy. You bet. So I don't know whether they was figuring on catching me or not. But by golly, I'll tell you, somebody stretched a wire across the road and I lost the top off of my buggy. That's Bear Creek Road. You come out of Princeton. And if you was coming from Potlatch, you'd turn right and go in that back road there and then come up. And by golly, over in there, by golly, there's a wire stretch across the road. Boy, and I've been asleep in that buggy. I don't know whether it caught me around the neck or where it caught me. I had the lines tied up, but I...
You mean the horses were doing themselves?
I was asleep in the buggy. And the horses were just going for themselves. You bet. I lost the top off my buggy. Bet. But ordinarily, that I never had too much trouble. Of course, that night we lost the blankets out of the car. Of course, we had some married people. Claude Kim and his wife. We had several married couples with us that night. That we lost that outfit. What we did, we went down to a masquerade ball that night. That's what we were doing down there that night. Bet we had quite a time. Bet.
Well, did the two towns ever slug it out, or was it over over baseball game?
I don't know what, I never did, that's what I say, no, I never did have any fights down there, I never did have any, you bet, but, we was down there a lot, too, and then they used to come up to Harvard, too.
Yeah.
Bet.
No, I heard a guy from Princeton telling me about going up to Harvard, getting them hayseeds back there. He said, we were hayseeds and they were hayseeds, and we thought they were a little further back than we were.
Bet. Yeah, there was the Crumleys, and then Preston Bunny used to come up there. Oh, there'd be quite a few come up there to Harvard to the dances. Bet.
Well, are there other stories that you can think of from when you were a kid? Because that's part of the old times that, you know, what kids do when their kids are, what they used to do, you know, when they didn't have all the things they've got nowadays.
I lost the tongue out of my sled one night. We was up here, I'll tell you who lives there now. The place is where, Cone. Delmer Cone lives there now. He was there to a party one night. And we were seeing who's going to get hooked up first. I was the only one that had a four-horse team in the outfit. And by golly, you know, I started out there a little too fast. And my left-hand runner hit a stump. And by golly, you know, them four horses just took me right out over the front, and they started off cross country, by gosh. Yeah, you bet. Yeah, I took the roll. I took the roll and it took the tongue right out of my slap. Hey, bet. Bet you. You're darn right.
So how'd you handle that?
Huh?
How'd you handle that?
Well, I just got, I just took and then took my outfit off and went and seen Peyton Queener. He owned the place and got his sled. And I went back and got it the next day. Bet. Well, in fact, all that happened, I'll tell you what it is. It's what you call a roll. It fits in between your runners like this. And then you got a big rod that goes right through here, you see. And then there's rings here with braces, you see, on it. And all I did was, when I bent this rod, that took and let the rest of it loose.
Uh-huh.
That left the rest of it loose the way it went, see, that left the rest of it loose. In fact, there wasn't anything broke as far as that goes. The only thing, you see, I had to straighten the rod and do a little minor repairs is all. It wasn't hard to repair. Of course, I couldn't do it that night, but I went back the next day and took the sled back and got mine. I took two horses back, not mine, bet.
Did you ride horseback a lot when you were a kid?
No, not too much. It was a lot easier for me to hook up a team than it was to saddle. I never did care much for a riding horse. I bet. I never did care too much for a riding horse. Well, I did a little, but very little.
So mostly when you were a boy, you got around by a team?
Team and sled, you bet, or a buggy, either one. I always had it, when I was on the ranch, I always had a team and sled and team and buggy. Huh. You bet. Mm-hmm. Yep.
What about cars? Do you remember when the cars first started coming in?
Well, oh yeah, well, I can remember, sure. The first car that I ever rode in was a 1912 Model T Ford. That's the first car I rode in. But that was, I'll tell you who had it. And that was Warney May out there on American Ridge. He was at American Ridge that time. I suppose you've heard of Junior May out there on American Ridge now, haven't you? Mm-hmm. Well, that was his dad. In fact, Orny May's first wife was my first cousin. You bet. And that's the first car that Orny had. It was either 11 or 12 Ford. I don't remember. That's the first car I ever rode in. And then about the next one was an old case. McGregor's come in there from Hooker. And they had a sheep camp right below our place. And he had a band of sheep up in the Plouse. And he asked me if I wanted to go for a ride, and so I said, why, sure. And so I got in that old case, and we went to Harvard, and then went up to Plouse. See, I'll tell you, our ranch is where, I live right where Jess Bircher lives now, between here and Harvard. That's where I was raised. That's just how far I got away from home. You bet. That's just how far away from I got away from home. And so, so we went up there, and so a fellow named Corey Smith had the store there. He had a barrel of gas with a pump in it all right enough, but this McGregor, I don't know which one it was. It was three brothers. I don't know. Two of their names is Pete and John, and I don't know what the other one, but this was one of the McGregors. And he pulled in there with that case, and it was low on oil, and all Forrest Smith had, he poured a gallon of cream separator oil in that case and took off with it. He didn't have no motor oil. He poured a gallon of cream separator oil in that case and took off with it. You bet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I had my first car in 1920. Mm-hmm. I had a Ford. Yeah.
What was Harvard like when you were growing up?
Oh, it's just about the same as it is now. Of course, hotel building, it's gone. And I couldn't tell you about the population. I suppose the population is probably just the same, but same then as it is now. I was in there a year ago last summer. I was down there a year ago last summer. My wife's sister wanted to go down and see an old lady there, Mrs. Gilmore. Mrs. Eddie Gilmore, so I took her down. And then Claire DeChamp lives there in Harvard. He's a very good friend of mine. I don't know whether you ever met him or not.
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He never came into this country until 1935. Well, you got Ed Hilton's name down, haven't you? The one who used to swamp for John Buckbeak. Did you get Ed Hilton's name down?
Is he still around?
Oh, no, he passed away, 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years this coming spring that Ed passed away. Mm-hmm. He was over 90 years old. Well, Claire the Champ was Ed Hilton's, is Ed Hilton's son-in-law. Was Ed Hilton's son-in-law. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, him and Buckby, they worked in the woods together for years and years, and the Buckby Grove team and Ed Hilton's swamp pony.
Well, I thought you told me that your father was mostly a logger. I didn't know he had a ranch.
No, that was my stepfather.
Oh.
That was my stepfather. See, I never knew my dad until winter night, until December 1922. See, I was 20 years old then. That was my stepfather that had that place. Well, in fact, part of it was my dad's place, but my mother and dad separated when I was a baby. And so he homesteaded 160 acres in there, and my stepfather, he had 80 acres in there, so consequently it was 240 acres. But my stepdad did log too. You bet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mother and dad, they separated when I was a baby. And then she stayed down there, and part of the kids went one way and part of them another. See, there was a big family that was, 13 of us in the family besides my half-sister that made 14. Bet. Yeah, I had brothers and sisters that I never even saw.
Huh.
Bet. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Did many of them live on the farm with you?
Just one brother is all. That's that one I showed you a picture of. That was Clark, and he didn't stay there. Just quick as he got old enough to work, then he took off. Mm-hmm. But I stayed on the ranch till 22, and that's when I took off. That's when we rented the ranch. We rented to Dwight Corey down here. And then we bought a hotel there in Harvard. Mother and I bought a hotel there. We bought that in 23. And then she passed away in 27, and I sold the building to a fellow named Weedmark. And then it's burnt down now, though. There's a tavern now in the place of where the hotel building's set. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, when did you first start working in the woods?
22.
Had you worked when you were a boy much in the woods too?
No, well, I never did work in the woods at all until I went to the woods. 22. See, I went to work on the railroad down there on the Yale Hill at in March of 1920. See, I wasn't. I'm born in 19 too, so I guess I'd have been 18 that
right.
Fall. I'd have been 18 that fall. I went to work when I was 17. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you quite an experience down there too. That was after I left the section, and that's when I had that first Model T Ford, a touring car, that was quite an experience, I'll tell you. And Harry Gleaves was the deputy sheriff out of Potlatch, and this fellow named Edmund Johnson was section foreman, and really. I don't remember where I was going, but I was headed up this way, and I got there just as the passenger train come up, and here was Edmund Johnson, here was the deputy sheriff. And so, by golly, Gleaves come up. Well, Edmund knew me. Well, I'd worked for him for 2 years. I'd just quit him. See, I'd just quit him just a little while before that. But what I think it was between jobs from the time I worked at Camp 10, and then I was... Then I was waiting for go down to Camp 1 and go to work on Hatter Creek. I think it was between jobs, and I was coming up here somewhere, and by golly, they stopped me and they asked me. They said there used to be an old construction camp there when they built the railroad, and there was a dugout in the darn hill there. And they says there's a crazy man in there. And so I said, and they want to know if I'd haul him back to the train. I said, yeah, we'll help you. And by golly, you know, I turned around and they got in the Model T, and I drove up there in front of this old shack and stopped. Well, it was practically along the road. We had to walk a ways back into the bank. And I could hear him in there. He was snapping a pair of pliers, see. I hear that. And so I tried the darn door, and the darn door, well, he had it latched some way, and so I got just a little bit too ambitious. I took it, backed off, and kicked the door in, and you know, I went in there and grabbed that old fellow, you know, and couldn't turn loose from him. By golly, he took and scratched my face, he scratched my hands, he spit in my face. I began to think that Harry Gleaves never was going to get the handcuffs off on that guy. Well, I was just scratched all over. By golly, and so then when we got him loaded the train, then I went up to Maddie Johnson, she was a sexton, and so she cleaned me all up with Lysol, you know. He had long whiskers about here and ragged overalls, and his feet was wrapped up in gunny sacks. But I never was so scratched up in my life. Well, I just couldn't do nothing with that old fella. He wasn't very big either, but boy, I'll tell you, he sure scratched me up before I got turned loose of him. Vet. So I was always kind of particular about tying into another crazy man, I'll tell you.
Did anybody know who he was? Did anybody?
No, I never did find out. I never did. They took endorphine, and I never did find out what happened. Who he was or anything. He'd come in there. I guess he'd come in there the night before because Edmund said he heard him a screaming or something or hollering, and he called the deputy sheriff from Potlatch, you see, and by golly, he come up on the train, Harry Gleaves. But,
where was he hiding out? What was he in? Was he in a
just
shack?
It was a dugout cellar is what it was. You see, it was a dugout cellar with a door in front of it. See, imagine that, It's gone now. And boy, I'll tell you something. That was something.
It sounds like it was something.
Bet to get turned loose from him, you bet. Oh, yeah.
Yes. He just didn't want to let you go.
Oh, by golly, I tell you, I begin to think Harry Gleaves ever was going to get the handcuffs on him. Edmund, he just looked back and didn't do too much either. Bet.
Well, what did you do on your first job there when you were working on the railroad? What was the work that you did?
Well, we was raising track. That was, we'd jack it up, see, and then put rock under it, I mean the level of track, and then we'd put in ties. We had to put in ties every year too, you know. You see, the foreman, he'd go along and mark them, the ones that he'd want taken out, then we'd have to take them out, then we'd have to put in new ties, and then we'd have to jack up the track, you know, and tamp, what we call tamping the ties. Now you see, that's all done with machinery now, you bet. Mm-hmm. Bet.
Well, so this was after the whole road was constructed.
Yeah,
all those,
after the whole road was built. That was maintenance, is what it was. You know, that's what you'd call maintenance, you bet. Mm-hmm.
I'd heard about a strike that they had on the railroad.
That was in 1919. That's the one you have reference to?
I think it was.
Yeah. That was the railroaders up here. I mean the ones that on the company, yeah. The company, I don't think the WIM ever had a strike, but the company did, but I mean the fellows that worked on the train crews up here.
Oh, you mean out of the camps?
Yeah, out of the camps,
there,
yeah. Yeah, Machays and that stuff, yeah. I'm pretty sure of that, see. Yeah.
Well, you know anything?
See, that was just before I went to work.
Ah, mm-hmm. Right.
See, that was the fall before I went to work.
I heard that they lost a lot of good men while that strike was on.
That was in 1936 over here. That's when the IWW struck.
Oh, no, that's another one now.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm thinking about the railroad.
Oh, you're thinking about the railroad.
Yeah, I heard that, you know, they had, I heard it was pretty funny. They had a bunch of new guys, greenhorns.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, I sort of say I couldn't tell you anything about that. Well, Norman Nelson's father was in on that. It has this tavern there in Deary Fuzzy. Oh my gosh, look out there.
Just blowing to beat the band.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, Norman Nelson's father was in on that because he was railroading at the time. And the next spring, that's when he come to go to work on the section was Emil. And he wound up to be the section boss there at Deary. Emil Nelson did. That's Fuzzy's dad. So,
Well, when you came there to work, were there any of the foreign Italians and those people?
No, they were gone. No, we were just strictly Americans. There was up here at Bowville, I think they had one or two maybe, but the class of them, of course, the extra gang come in. They was all foreigners when the extra gang came in. They was all foreigners when the extra gang came in. But most of the local men was all white people, Americans. You bet.
Well, now, what led you to get off of the off of working section and working logging?
I just figured I'd make more money. See, make better money, more money. But I don't know. But that's what I did anyway. I went to Woods in May of 1932. Art Tracy was the first foreman I worked for. Art Tracy. And I was up here at Camp 10, right up here on Crail Creek.
But what did you do? What did he have you do?
Oh, I was sawing logs then. I went sawing. That's the first thing I done. I went sawing then. Then from sawing, I went to driving team, and then from driving team. Well, I'll tell you. I went to Princeton, and I drove a team down there the fall before for the fellow by the name of Frank Johnson. I drove four up on a dray. That's what you call a dray. You see, there was one team in the woods that bunched the logs, and then we had a pretty long haul, and we loaded them on. It was just a rig with two runners and a bunk. And I'd load that, and then I'd take that to landing. That's what we call the dray. And then the next spring, I went back sawing with my same partner again. And the next spring when I went to work, I went back sawing for the same partner. And then he had his application to go scaling, so he went scaling, and. And so Tom Kelly, he was the camp foreman, and I'd done everything. I never even had a steady job down there. Then all the time I was with Kelly, I never had a steady job. If there was a teamster short, I drove team. If there's a swamper short, I swamped. And when I didn't have anything else to do, I bucked wood. So that's what I say. Mm-hmm. And he seen that I made pretty fair money at that too. You bet. Yeah.
Well, one team bunched, and did that team bunched, and then you loaded those bunches onto the dray.
Yeah, right? Then I loaded the logs onto the dray and took them to land. You bet. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what were you loading with them?
We loaded them by hand. We had what we call drop skids. See? You bet.
They were just skids that went from one to the other.
Yeah, you bet. See, you put them down. You bet. General rule, you know, we'd put in a bunk log. You see, with one skid on it. You see, we'd put in a bunk log here. What we call a bunk log. Then we'd have one skid. That way we could balance our log when we put it on the dray. See, so that it'd just barely touch the ground. And that'd be the first load, and then the next one we'd have two skids, and they'd be further back up the hill so that you could pretty roll them on again with the level, see? Still level, you see, we just load them by hand. Yeah.
So the bunk log was sat underneath the skid, and the skid sat on top of it, and it leveled it out.
Bet. Mm-hmm. Bet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We had what we, well, it isn't the bunk log either. It's what we call a head block. Head block is what we call it. It's a head block. With one skid on, then we'd roll that on. You see, that's what we call a bunk load. And then we had corner binds, and they was two chains, one on each side, and it had a round hook and a fid hook. And the two outside logs, you'd bind them with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd put our skids further up the hill and. Then we'd roll on, so it'd be just about level, you see. You bet. Mm-hmm. You bet.
And what about a bumper log? You were telling me a good story about the bumper log before. Now, I wanted to get a bumper log straight.
Well, it's a log that you put out, you know, like I told you, here's your headblock. Here's your one skid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and this here, you roll this log out here, and then you block it, and that's what we call the bumper log. Then we roll the rest of them against it.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah, that's what I did up there at Camp 5 when I was bunching for Fred Fuger. Let him break that bunk in that dray. You bet.
Right.
You're darn right.
Because he wasn't leaving you one. He was
He took the whole work, see. He never left me nothing, see. Because if you got a bumper log down there to catch it, it makes it a lot easier. But where you got the, and where you got a pretty fast skid too, what I mean, the log will roll in pretty good shape. It's quite a little job to get one out there, you know, and bet. Darn right, I fixed him. Betcha.